welcome. Every cannonball starts with a jump, and then it ends with a huge splash as the waves ripple out. And welcome to East Lake Church. We call this a church for everyone. We're hoping that wave ripples out. And if you're just checking out East Lake today, or you just started coming, great series to be here, because you'll learn more about East Lake in the next couple weeks than you'd learn in months and months and months. But more importantly, hopefully, you'll learn a lot about Jesus and what it means to walk with Jesus. And what we're doing at Cannonball is we're talking about an attitude. We're saying, what if my attitude, my life looked like a cannonball, looked like me going through the sky? What if I asked God to forgive me, something I never wanted to talk about, and I asked God to forgive me, and it worked? And I felt free in an area that I hadn't felt for a super, super long time. It felt like doing a cannonball flying through the sky, hits the water, makes a wave, and the waves go out into my life, the freedom. What if I had a conversation with someone? Is there someone you need to have a conversation with? You keep putting it off, putting it off, putting it off. What if I went to him and I finally had the talk and it worked? And the relationship was completely restored and the waves went out, all the different things that we got to do and the connections we had now. You know, what if? Can you imagine how it would feel? Or what if, wouldn't it be amazing if somebody walked up to you years from now and they said, you know, do you remember the time that you helped me financially? It changed everything for me. It gave me hope. The trajectory of my life completely changed when that time you helped me out financially. Wouldn't that be amazing? That's what we're talking about. That with God's help, with Jesus, we can actually do a cannonball through the sky. That can be our attitude. Now grab your books, these books right here, and turn to week 3. It's on, just check it out, just grab that book. This is both a history piece and a vision piece. These are for you to keep. Our outlines are in there every week. In the back, there's some devotional materials. You can meet with people and go over the growth through stuff. Each week, the outlines are in here. We're talking about different things. Now, cannonball can be summed up sort of in this sentence. It's not in your book, but you might write it in the margin. Here's the sentence. If we decide to give more of our attention to God, he'll do amazing things. That's cannonball. If I was willing to give a little bit more, if I give some attention to God, he'll do amazing things in my life. Now today, we're going to talk about a dangerous prayer. How would we present ourselves to God? It's a dangerous prayer, but it's also a prayer that changes everything. It's in the very, very top of your book, and I'd like to read it together. So everybody grab your book. If you don't have a book, look on to the person next to you. It's in Psalm 139. We'll read it together. Now try to raise your voice just a little bit so I don't feel like a geek up here reading all by myself. Okay, so turn to it right there, week 3, and start, search me, O God. I'll count to 3. We'll all read it together. 1, 2, 3. Search me, God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me and lead me in the way everlasting. That's pretty nice. Give yourself a hand. Nice big round of applause. You're good readers. Yeah, this idea of a prayer, and to pray that prayer right off the bat, it's dangerous because it seems like it could put me in a very vulnerable situation with God. Like, what if he shows me something that I don't want to see? What if I have to go through something, some exposure that I don't want to go through with God? Several weeks ago, I went and had a complete physical, and it was the best physical I've ever had. I find out my doctor is a woman, so right off the bat, I start to get nervous about a physical. And, you know, as it's approaching weeks and weeks, I'm worried about this physical. And I go in to have the physical. It's the best physical I ever had. I go into a room. They have me sit down in a chair. They don't make me take my clothes off. I get to sit there. The lady comes in with the clipboard, my doctor, and she asks me a few questions. Do I exercise, food, stuff like that? She doesn't, like, tell me I have to change very much or anything. She takes a little blood and sends me on my way, says she'll send me my results. It was the best physical I've ever had in my life. And I was nervous about it for weeks. What's going to happen? Let me tell you why. I had a complete physical a while back that was completely the opposite. I go to see my doctor that I'd had for a long, long time, and I've since changed from that doctor. And I get there, I go in, they take me to a little cold room, And they hand me one of those gowns that you can never get to close in the back. And they say, take off all your clothes, put the gown off, and sit on that table. So I'm like, okay, all right. You know, so I get the gown on and I try to get it closed behind me. And I sit down on the table. Why do they keep those rooms so cold? I mean, it's a doctor. Do you want to? I don't want the flu coming to see you, catch a cold, you know, cold. And nobody shows up. I'm sitting on this little freezing cold table like a sheet of ice. And you know how thin those little things are. It kept opening up and the breeze is going through. And I'm looking out the doors. Does anybody remember I'm even in here? You know. Finally, the doctor comes in with a nurse and starts asking me questions. And basically, this is how it goes. Everything that I'm doing in my life is wrong. Everything I like to eat, I can't eat anymore. And everything I don't want to do, I need to start doing. That's the physical exam with the doctor. And then he says these words to me. He says, you know, a man your age. What do you mean by that? He says, you know, a man your age needs to have his prostate checked. And I didn't really know what that was, but I knew that I'd heard it's not good. And so I'm sitting on this bed in this little gown, and I said, well, Doc, how do you do that? And he explains it to me, and I put my hand up, and I said, I'll take a pass. And he says, no, a man your age. And for the next 5 minutes, he goes on explaining to me why it's critical that I have my prostate checked, a man my age. Well, I'm not going to go into the gory details with you, but I allowed my prostate to be checked. And it was the worst physical of my entire life. I mean, to say that I was caught off guard and embarrassed and felt completely vulnerable would be a tremendous understatement. And I feel like a lot of times I think it's like that when we go before God to pray to him to say, show me some things, God, about my life. Now, today, this dangerous prayer, we're going to break it down into four things. And write your notes first. Search my heart. Search me, God, and know my heart. And why would we ever do it? I mean, why would you go before God and say, search me, God? How? Think of the level of trust to say to God, you can look inside my heart, God. And you know, it's not like he needs to search my heart to find out things about me. He's searching my heart so he can show me stuff. And if he shows me something I don't like, or here's the thing, and here's the trust. It's the trust that God will never make me aware of anything that he's not prepared to heal or help me with. That his timing is impeccable. That as he searches through my heart and he wants to show me something, he knows that he's ready to heal me, and he also knows that I'm ready to be healed. And you know, it's not like a floodgate is gonna like come down and you're gonna be overwhelmed with all this bad stuff. Listen to this. God knows the amount to show me that I can handle. And he knows when to show me. He knows he's ready to heal me, and he knows that I'm ready to be healed. Is there anything that is sort of bothering you and you really are wanting to get beyond it, that means you're ready. And a dangerous prayer is to go to God and say, God, would you just, you know, show me what's going on in my life? Would you show me, God, because, you know, it's an attitude. A cannonball says, I'm ready, God. You know, part of the problem with, you know, not being able to see things is an attitude can be so small, I can't see it. An attitude can grow so slowly, I can't detect it. God can, but I can't. It's so small, it's so slow. It's like a virus. I don't even know I have the attitude yet. I can't see it. It's so far away. But just like a virus, it grows and grows, and pretty soon I'm sick. And God sees all that stuff. One person in the Bible says it this way, and this is in your notes. The human heart is the most deceitful of all things. And desperately wicked. Who really knows how bad it is? We are all susceptible to self-deception. Every one of us. And I understand. I remember a time in my life when I was wanting God to help me grow and show me things. And one of my jobs as a pastor was to oversee this youth group of high school kids, hundreds and hundreds of high school kids in this community. We're in this youth group. And in the youth group, there was a core of 12 teenagers, high school kids, that were also leaders. because we wanted it to be sort of teen-driven. And I knew these kids ever since they were in junior high school. I'd watched them grow up. They were all leaders. And we decided to have a seminar, like a workshop, that we'd bring someone in that would do some training, leadership training, with the teenagers and the adults. And so we're all together, and it's all going fantastic. And at one point in the afternoon, the workshop leader turned the topic towards vulnerability. Started talking to the kids about you need to be vulnerable with God and vulnerable with each other, that's the way leadership teams work. And as the conversation amongst the kids started developing, I started noticing that the topic started to turn to me. It's like all of a sudden they're talking about vulnerability and they're starting to put the spotlight on me. And what they were saying was they had noticed that there was a gap between what I said about vulnerability and the way that I lived. And I'll always remember there was this one senior, her name was Chelsea. I'd known her since she was in junior high school. She was a dynamic leader. And she said to me, she said, Robin, it's like being with you means it feels like I never get to help you. Said it right in front of everybody. I thought about that, and in my head I thought, you don't get to help me. Chelsea, I don't want your help. And I don't want to be in a place where I have to depend on your help. Because I've done that before in my life. I've needed people before to come through for me, and they didn't come through for me. And so I don't want to live that way anymore. And I went home, and after the workshop, I went home, and I wanted to test and see, like, you know, what does my wife think? What does Clarice think? So I went home, and I sat down with Clarice, and I told her the story, and I said, babe, do you see me that way? And she said, yes, I do. I never get to help you. And it's causing distance in our relationship. I feel like it's putting a wedge between us. And you know, it was the start of a very powerful process for me. Because I was in a place where I was wanting God to show me some things. He looked into my heart and he said, I think you're ready to start trusting people. And I'm ready to heal you. So now please know, when God reveals something to you, it's good news. It's him saying, I'm ready to heal you. But even more, he knows us better than we know ourselves. He looks at us and says, and I think you're ready for my help and my healing. That's number one. Number two, reveal my fear. Search me, God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. Anxious thoughts, that's that auto loop that keeps playing in our minds. I'm not old enough. I'm too old. I've been through too many relationships. I screwed up last time I tried to parent. I've already wasted my money. I've been fired before. It's the auto loop that goes in our mind. I've already blown my chance. You know, and we keep telling ourselves the story. And do you know you can set up fear in a way that you say it to yourself so many times that it becomes normal. It's like the fear is, you know what they always say, if you want to hide something, put it in plain sight. It's like the fear is invisible to me because I've told the story so many times and disqualified myself by the fear. It's normal for me now. I hardly even react to it. And that's important to know because when fear becomes my friend, it makes all the decisions. And what it's saying is, show me, God. The writer of this is saying, I think I make bad choices when it comes to fear. I need you to show me how it's operating in my life. What are the stories? There's a quote I want to read you, and this is Bren Brown. The most powerful stories may be the ones we tell ourselves, but beware. They're usually fiction. What are you anxious about in your life? Are you afraid one of your children is going to derail their life? Afraid something's going to happen in one of your relationships, something going on at work where you're just certain, you know, the boss is going to come down on you. I'm going to lose my job. What is it that you're anxious about? What's the story? It keeps going around and around and around. Another author, Shauna Nyquist, says it this way. I've always had what I call a crazy brain, a mind that runs and spins and whirls in the middle of the night, overanalyzing and spinning out. My mind is a bad neighborhood. Ever lived in that neighborhood? Spinning out, you can't control it, worse and worse and worse. You know how it goes. You start to get afraid, and the next thing, what's going to happen to my kids? And they're starting to show that kind of behavior. And you know, we're talking about someone 3 years old. They didn't mind. What happens when they get into elementary school? They're going to disobey the teachers, and they're going to get kicked out, and they're going to go to high school, and they're going to get suspended. They won't be able to get a good job, so they have to steal and start selling drugs, and the next thing you'll be in prison. That's going to be my kid. They're 3 years old, man. But it's spinning out of control. And you can apply that in a lot of different ways in life. You just become afraid. And what keeps you up at night? And in this Cannonball series, we're talking about how money is such a leverage point for God to do things in our life. What anxious thoughts do you have about money? You ever feel like you're one financial slip away from disaster? Do you ever feel like, how am I going to save enough money to send these kids to college? Do you ever feel like, I'll never retire, I'm going to work until I'm 90. To drop dead on the job. I'll never have enough money. What anxious thoughts do you have about money? I'll never be able to save enough to buy a house. I'll never be able to buy her the ring I want. Whatever. What anxious thoughts do you have about money? Particularly. Now, Jesus tells a story. It's not in your notes, but it's a good one. He tells a story in the Bible. There's four books in the Bible specifically about Jesus. Matthew and Mark and Luke and John, their biographies. And there's one called Matthew that was written by a rich person. Writes a story about Jesus. And he heard Jesus tell a story. And he writes it out. And Jesus tells this story about this rich boss that had three employees. And he calls the three employees in. He wants to give them some money. He wants to bless them. Wants to give them something. So he gives them all some money to invest for him. He gives one guy $100,000, one guy $50,000, and one guy $10,000, each according to their abilities. He gives them this money. He says, go invest this money. Do whatever you want with it. I trust you. I trust you. I trust you. Just go invest this money. So after a period of time, he calls them back in, and the one with $100,000 comes in, and he's doubled the money. And there is trust in the air, and everybody's a party time. The one with $50,000 comes in, and he's doubled the money. And everybody's happy, and it's joyful. And then the third guy comes in. And he comes in, he's the one that the boss was the most concerned about. He knows he struggles. So he gives him an amount that's just perfect for him. He says, I'm trying to set you up to win so you will not be overwhelmed. Remember now, whatever God shows you, he's not going to flood you and overwhelm you. God times it and puts it just perfect for this guy, and the guy misses his chance. Do you know God can set everything up for me? He knows he's ready. He knows I'm ready. He sets everything up for me, and I won't jump. And the opportunity goes by. The guy comes in, he says, I was too afraid to do anything. But this isn't in your notes, but I'll read it to you. It'll come up on the screen. I was afraid, so I went off and hid your money in the ground. Look, here's what belongs to you. Now there's a fill-in, and I want you to write this in. What we fear the most reveals where we trust God the least. It could be a relational thing. It could be money. It could be something in your future. It could be a bold step that you need to take at work. And there's the fear. Now, I want to say something to you. Conquering fear is not about, you know, squaring your shoulders up and being stronger or tougher. God never says to anybody, go conquer your fears so you can be close to me. God says, come close to me and let's go conquer fear. There's a great Bible verse, and just jot it in your notes, 1 Peter 5:7, cast all your anxiety on him, because he cares for you. Now, my buddy let me borrow this fishing pole And I want to show you. We have all seen these before. I mean, these are awesome, fishing pole. But I want you to see the analogy, what it means by casting. Because, you know, everybody has one of these. You get it here. And the idea is to cast it. So you're throwing out there. And that's what the Bible says to do with fears. You just take it and you just cast it away like that. And I've done that so many times. It feels so good to feel it. It comes off of me and away it goes. But here's my problem. Every pole comes with a reel. And then I find myself just very slowly. This happens to me all the time at work. I start to get afraid. The numbers aren't there. The sales aren't there. And so I go, oh, God cares for me. He's going to take care of me. God's got this. And I cast it away, and it feels so good. And then I start to daydream. Man, there hasn't very many customers lately. And my numbers aren't where they're supposed to be. I don't know if they're going to. If the customers are going to start showing up, it doesn't seem like any of the other guys are selling anything. And what am I going to do when my paycheck comes out? It's not going to be enough. And how am I going to pay these bills? And I have a mortgage and stuff could come up and I don't have that much savings to take care of this thing. Oh no, what if Clarice finds out? I better put on a really good, happy face and a strong face so she doesn't know. And what if I lose my house and pretty soon? And it's back. Now, it's a two-part thing. Cast your fears, but hang on to, he cares for me. See, that's what happens to me sometimes. I cast them just fine, but I think about them. Now, here's the antidote. He cares for me. What's keeping you up at night? He cares for me. Now, number three, uncover my sin. And boy, here we go now. That's where it's starting to get a little more personal. Uncover my sin. See if any offensive way in me. See if there is. I like his optimism. See if there's any offensive way. You know, the things in my life that don't measure up to God, the things that bother me, all the things that would come into the category that they're not God's way. Go ahead and look at all that stuff, God. And do you know what I'm saying when I trust that? Because I don't want to see that stuff, quite frankly. I'd like it to just go away. He wanted to check my prostate. I was like, I'm just going to ignore my prostate, thank you. I don't want an examination. I don't want to know if it's good or bad. But it'll kill you. Wreck your life. The stuff that's way down in there. Do you know that you can trust God to keep for you from spiraling into depression when you have to look at the bad stuff? Do you know what it's saying? It's saying, God, as I look at the bad stuff in my life, you won't let me forget the good stuff in my life. As you show me the bad things about me, God, you won't let me forget the good things about me. You won't let me sink into depression. You won't let my anger overwhelm me. You won't let me feel so dirty that I will believe I'll never be clean again. That's the trust. That's the cannonball attitude. It's saying, God, you're the one person I can trust with this stuff. Because as you show me that stuff, you won't let me forget that it's not, that doesn't define everything about me. There's a fill-in in your notes. Do we see ourselves as owners or managers? Let me give you the analogy, and here it is. Here's what it's saying. Do you know if you're the owner of the company and there's a shortfall and you can't make payroll, there's not enough money, if you're the owner, you don't have anybody to turn to. But if you're the manager and there's not enough money for your department that you're running, you can always turn to the owner. There's a huge difference between an owner and a manager. The third guy in Jesus' story, he lived like he was an owner. I don't have anybody to turn to. So if you're a manager and you get in a rough patch in your marriage, you can turn to the owner. Here's what it's saying. There's someone bigger than me to help me. When you go to God to ask him to show you the sinful stuff, you're going to someone saying, you're bigger than me. You can help me. Listen, I'm just trying to manage my life, God. And obviously I've not done so well, but you're the owner of my life. I'm trying the best I can with my finances. I've jacked them up, God, but you're the owner of my finances. I'm working it's hard to be a parent, God. They're teenagers. But I'm trying. You're the owner. Look what it says in the Bible. If you can't even handle a small thing like money, who's going to entrust you with the spiritual riches that really matter? If you don't manage well someone else's assets that are entrusted to you, who's going to give over to you the important spiritual and personal relationships to manage? We live as a manager before God. This is all yours. I'm managing it, but here's the important thing. When I get in trouble, I can go to you. You're the big one. You're the owner, and say, help. What's got you overwhelmed and you're afraid? And you're living like an owner, like there's no one to turn to. Make an exchange. Change the name tag on your door or your desk. You're a manager, not an owner. It's great to be a manager because then you have an owner, someone bigger. Number four, lead me. See if there is any offensive way and lead me. Circle that in the way everlasting. This is huge. This is the essence of the entire thing. This, all of Cannonball probably gets down to this right here. God, I'm willing to let you lead me. Let me give you a simple definition of faith. Simple definition of faith. God has the final say-so in my life. Big theological sentence for you. You know, God has the, that's faith. No matter what's going on, God, you've got the final say-so. And it's interesting that that Jesus uses money. And in this series, we're using money as a leverage point. I was trying to figure it out because we get so caught up and they want my money. Or I can't give up my money. Or it's like, that's not the point. And it wasn't the point with Jesus. And I met a couple recently. It was an older couple. And they had gotten this treadmill. We were talking about treadmills. And I knew that physical was coming up, so I figured I better get a treadmill. So I went in and they questioned me. I said, I just bought a treadmill. I'm doing good. So we're talking about treadmills. And this older couple, and I'm talking to them about it. And they're talking about running on this treadmill and getting in shape. And they're saying, we've never done anything like this in our life. We haven't watched our diet, but we're trying to get an exercise. We're walking, lifting weights, and we're running on this treadmill. And I turned to the lady, much older lady now. I said, what did you buy a treadmill for? She says, oh, that's simple. I want to be in good health so I can play with my grandchildren. I want to be able to get down on the floor with them and go on walks with them and hikes with my grandchildren. And I got it. I thought, well, it's not about the treadmill. It's not even about being in shape. It's about being able to be with my grandchildren. And it's the same with money. It's not about money. It's what God uses to get me in shape so I can be closer to him and I can have faith. It's like Jesus is giving a course and he's saying, how to have faith in God. Anybody can come. No prerequisites. You don't have to have never been divorced or go to church your whole life, any of that stuff. Here's the prerequisite. Anybody can come to my class on how to have faith. Anybody that has contact or has anything to do with or uses money. Isn't he fair? Now here's the last thing I want to read to you. Teach those who are rich in the world not to be proud and not to trust in their money, which is so unreliable. Their trust should be in God, who richly gives us all we need for our enjoyment. Tell them to use their money to do good. They should be rich in good works and generous to those in need, always being ready to share with others. By doing this, they will be storing up their treasure as a good foundation for the future so they may experience true life.